I am but a humble messenger. When I am told to go, I go. It is not for me to question my ruler or to ask how he came by certain knowledge. Certainly it is enough that he know, you know, and the gods know. What matter if a humble creature, such as I am, aware of the truth of the matter? As long as those whom I obey know the true nature of things, that is more than sufficient.
As it should be. Rise. Rise, Messenger Paul.
I was afraid to relax as I did so. For all I knew, I was being asked to stand up in order to make a simpler target for a man with a large sword.
My understanding is that you were in the fish market with my daughter, that you were attacked.
That is right, Imperial.
By members of the Skanki family. They themselves allies of the Forked Tongue.
That is correct again, Imperia.
Slowly, the Imperia shook his head, his long white beard waggling from side to side, making him look like a human-shaped goat.
It is obvious why they were there. They sought to attack my daughter, to take her from me and make her a prisoner in hopes that I would bow to their will.
Bastards.
Indeed. Indeed they are.
I wasn't about to correct him, of course. The fact was that the Forked Tongue, or Skanki family, didn't have the slightest clue about Mito being there with me. Which is not to say they wouldn't have acted upon it if they had known. But they hadn't. In fact, when Mito ran off, they ignored her utterly and continued assailing me. Which meant that they wanted something from me, not her. Except I wasn't about to tell the Imperia that.
Something must be done.
Well, perhaps I was misinformed, Your Illustriousness, but I have heard tell that you have issued a reward for any who are able to help bring an end to the Forked Tongue and their associates, including the Aeneas Ninjas. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, you have heard truly.
He stepped down from his throne, and I was amused to see that he came up barely to shoulder level on me. Since I was hardly a giant of a man, it certainly cut down on his regalness, at least for me.
I am an excellent judge of character, Paul. And I... What is this doing here?
He was looking at the corpse of the handmaiden.
She took her life, father, in order to please you?
Mitsu was so matter-of-fact about it that it prompted me to wonder just how many times this scene had been played out in similar fashion on other occasions.
I know that. Why isn't it cleaned up?
Immediately, a squad of servants charged forward, two of them carrying a large piece of cloth, and they used it to roll up the body. The rest of them used cleaning materials to wipe up the spilled blood as best they could. My guess was they would come back later, with washing fluids to try and get up the remainder of the mess. My further guess was that they had a good deal of experience with it. The message was obvious. Life was cheap.
I am an excellent judge of character, Paul, and it is my belief that you would do well to serve on my council.
What?
Yes, there has been a place open on my council ever since the departure of my sick younger brother.
Oh, well, I hope he recovers soon.
I doubt he will.
I got the impression that his older brother might have been the cause of his illness. I suspected the less I knew of that, the better.
But your graciousness, I am simply a humble messenger.
It is the wise man who knows his own humility. It is settled.
Retainers rushed forward. I couldn't blame them for rushing. Around this place, the slightest hesitation could result in personal disaster.
Bring Paul to a guest suite. See that he is bathed. He smells distinctly like fish. Then have him properly outfitted and brought to the council chamber within the hour. Would you like to have sex?
Your greatness, I don't know what to say.
Either yes or no would be acceptable answers.
I'm just wondering whether I'm worthy of such an honor.
He means with a female bathing attendant, not with him.
Very generous, Your Worship, but I'm not interested right now.
Males are also available.
I'm not in the mood, all right?
As you wish.
The last sight I had of the throne room was the attendants trying to mop up the blood of the fallen handmaiden. Bathing was a curious proposition, particularly since there was another man in the tub. As much as I had no idea what to expect in the royal palace, the notion that there was a man in the tub when I arrived at the bathing area was another level of lack of expectation entirely. I was wearing a white linen robe upon my arrival. accompanied by a young woman who kept refusing to make eye contact with me, no matter how much I encouraged her to do so. I stopped when I saw the scowling, bare-chested man lounging in a very large wooden tub in the center of the room. There was also a large drain to one side, which allowed any water splashing upon the floor to run off.
I'm sorry, I didn't know this was occupied. We can come back later.
Bathe!
His face was long and square-jawed, and his eyes were slate-gray and hard. Hard as granite. This was someone who could probably break me in half with his bare hands. I was so distracted that I was barely paying attention when the serving girl pulled the robe off me. Ugh. Leaving me standing there, stark naked, and rather self-conscious about the whole thing. She then proceeded to wash me down with warm cloths. It was relaxing, but I was a bit puzzled.
What are you doing?
I tried to separate my mind from the fact that this attractive woman was busily scrubbing my buttocks.
Cleaning you, sir.
Then what's the point of the bath?
Bring a filthy body into the bath. The water will become dirty and unusable.
I was about to toss off a retort before realizing that he had a valid point. So I simply stood there and allowed her to wash me off, which was probably the best thing that had happened to me all day, or even in the past month. Once she cleaned me to her satisfaction, she gestured towards the tub. I looked at the man warily. He didn't seem to be going anywhere. The tub was wide enough, however, that there was ample room for two. In fact, half a dozen people could have fit in there with little to no difficulty. So I eased myself into the tub, forcing a smile, and making sure that no part of me came into contact with the other man. He continued to scowl. I was starting to think it was the only expression at his command. There was a small wooden ridge extending from beneath the water which appeared to run the circumference of the tub. Obviously, it was there to sit on, and I did so.
I am called Poe.
I am Go, no go.
I see.
What are you doing here?
Well, I was told I should bathe, and after having my things put in my room, I was brought here.
What are you doing here, in the Forbidden City?
Oh, that. Well, I was sent here by a great king as an emissary.
No!
No.
A king is one who operates from a level of strength. He would choose as his emissary one who reflects that strength. He would not choose one who is lame of leg, for that would send a message to all who saw him that the king is weak as well.
Really? And yet the Imperator, who draws his inspiration from the gods, accepts me at my word. Are you saying that the Divine One is wrong and that you are right? I would hate to think that you would try to elevate yourself above him. Seems rather insulting, even dishonorable. You might be asked to apologize by gutting yourself like a trout.
I would gladly lay down my life in the service of the Imperium.
If laying down your life is what you're interested in doing, then, judging by what I've seen, you're working for the right fellow. By the way, if I may ask, what do you do here? What's your function? I mean...
And suddenly I was submerged. Go No Go had reached across the tub underwater, quick as a swamp snake, and grabbed my ankle. Considering my relative vulnerability at that moment, I suppose I should have been grateful that my ankle was all he was grabbing. I tried to sit up, but was unable to as his hand shoved down on my chest, pushing all the air out of my lungs. I grabbed at his forearm, tried to push him away, but wasn't at all successful. I might as well have been trying to uproot an oak tree. Assassin! He's an assassin from the Forked Tongue. I'm going to die, underwater, in a damned bathtub, at the hands of a stranger. I'm going to die. Well, at least I didn't have to have sex with the Imperator. Suddenly, the pressure was gone. Instantly, I splashed upward, and when my head broke the surface, great geysers of water blasted out of my lungs. The bathing wench was kneeling nearby, her hands daintily placed upon her thighs. Go No Go was seated on the opposite side of the tub, his face as inscrutable as it had been before. And standing nearby, her hands on her hips, was Mitsu. She was wearing a plain white kimono and was looking far more like a female than when I'd first met her.
Are you quite through, Go?
What the hell did you do that for?
No warning.
Doesn't anyone around here believe in just saying what's on their mind instead of trying to kill somebody or making sure they kill themselves? Why is everything life and death with you people?
life and death are intertwined. To accept the way of one is to accept the inevitability of the other. It does not matter when death comes. Only how one dies is of consequence.
All right. Well, I'm casting a vote right now for in my bed of old age.
He then rose from the tub, at which point I was able to see for myself just why he would hold me, and probably a good deal of the rest of mankind, in disdain. Go-No-Go picked up a robe from a peg where it was hanging nearby and draped it around himself.
Remember my warning.
Then he turned, bowed once to the princess, and walked off with a swagger that was almost as impressive as the rest of him.
He's an assassin? He would have killed me if you hadn't...
Oh. The Princess Mitsu had divested herself of her robe and was now standing naked as her birthday. Several bathing maidens had entered and were washing her down with cloths. Her breasts were quite small, almost childlike. The rest of her figure, though, belied the notion that she was in any way immature. The only thing that managed to draw my attention away from the more traditional eye-catching parts of her body was the fascinating tattoo she had on her right arm, which stretched to her upper shoulder. It was a dragon, no shock there, its tail encircling down to her elbow and its head coming up and over her shoulder. Its mouth was open, and it had a long, fierce red tongue extended, angling down toward her... well...
He wouldn't have killed you. He simply becomes over-enthusiastic sometimes. You know, this is the first time you've lowered your gaze for me. Do you have a problem with naked women where you come from?
Not under certain circumstances, but these are not those.
Ah, you associate the naked body of the opposite sex with intercourse, yes?
And you don't?
No.
She gestured for the maidens to step aside, and she approached the tub. My mind flew back to the last time I was in a tub with a naked woman. It had been the Lady Kate back when I was Peace Lord. And a good time was had by all. Then I suddenly began to feel a certain degree of urgency in my loins, stemming from both my recollection of the times past and what was occurring now. I came to the realization that if I didn't get the hell out of the tub at that moment, my condition would reach the point where exiting the tub and displaying my enthusiasm would simply prove far too embarrassing. And I did not want to take any chance of anything happening with Mitsu in the tub. The circumstances were very different from what had transpired between Princess Entebbe and myself, but there were enough similarities that I wanted to steer very clear of any possible repetition, to say nothing of the fact that her father was a crazy man who thought that requiring people to kill themselves was a perfectly acceptable way to conduct one's daily routine. I had no desire to be added to that rapidly expanding list of corpses. I lurched to my feet, moving quickly, turning my back to Mitsu. My back, admittedly, was also naked, but it was less inflammatory. Splashed out onto the floor, and my slick feet went out from under me, causing me to fall flat. This was one occasion I didn't mind, however, since it helped conceal that which I preferred to keep to myself. I quickly got my robe around me and draped a towel around my middle for good measure. I got to my feet and leaned against the tub. Mitsu was in the middle of the tub, looking very relaxed.
Are you quite all right?
As right as I can be, considering someone was trying to kill me less than a minute ago.
I told you. He was just warning you. Go-No-Go takes his position very seriously.
And what position is that?
I grabbed another towel and dried my hair.
Lord High Executioner?
No. Head of Security.
Wonderful. So you wandered about and your father objected.
He objects to anything I do that would be akin to what a man does. He believes females should know their place. Do you?
I don't even know what my place is. I wouldn't presume to tell someone else to know theirs. And how did you get together with Mordant?
Mordant?
The Drabbit. You know, the small dragon?
Oh, yes. He caught my fancy in the circus cage. I decided it was unfair such a creature should be imprisoned, so I decided to free him. Simple as that.
I knew perfectly well it wasn't that simple. The princess may have been many things, but a skilled liar was not among them. But there was no point impressing her on it.
I am very impressed, by the way.
Oh, well, I mean, the water was just a little bit cold, but I'm flattered that you
With the way you handled my father.
Oh.
Earlier. The manner in which you manipulated my father's beliefs played to his sense of godly superiority. That was very deft. You might fit in here after all.
I'm just a visitor, and considering what transpired here minutes ago, not even all that welcome a visitor at that.
You should not sell yourself short, Upperpool. All evidence to the contrary. You are a very serious individual. You need to become more relaxed. Do you see that table?
She pointed to a table standing nearby.
Yes.
Go lie down flat upon it. Remove your robe. Keep the towel around your middle if you wish.
I really don't see how.
Do as I say.
Deciding it wouldn't be wise to press matters with her, I limped over to the table, removed my robe, but maintained the towel, as per her suggestion, and lay flat. I had no idea what to expect. Then one of the bath maidens landed feet first upon my back. She weighed almost nothing. Her bones must have been hollow.
Now, just a minute.
Then she started to move across my back, digging her toes in, loosening the muscles. I couldn't believe it as the tension began to seep out of me.
Feeling a bit more at ease, apropos.
Wax off, huh?
There are many techniques, many aspects of Chinpan of which you can avail yourself. If you do not do so, it would be a great tragedy.
And if I fail to do so, will I be required to kill myself?
No. Why would you?
Why was that young woman?
Yes. Well, she was required to take my place. The Imperial can't very well be executing or demanding ritual suicide of his only daughter now, can he?
Doesn't it bother you that your actions cause others to suffer?
Does that never happen where you come from?
No. Well, royal families do have whipping boys. When young princes misbehave, the whipping boys are flogged since the persons of royalty are sacrosanct. But that's different. And they don't kill the poor bastard.
The girl on my back placed her toes on the back of my neck and started to manipulate something between her toes. I felt a jolt of energy that seemed to originate at the bottom of my brain and ran through all the way to my feet.
And if two kings are not able to get along, if they have disputes over borders or some such and declare war upon each other, are not soldiers summoned to serve as proxies, to fight and die in the name of a dispute that the rulers simply couldn't be bothered to settle in a less terminal way?
You're distorting it, Princess.
Am I? Seems to me I'm putting things perfectly accurately. And you simply don't wish to acknowledge that.
It is pointless to continue this discussion, Mitsu. I do not wish to offend you, but fear if we keep on talking about it, that sooner or later I will.
As you wish.
The next thing I knew, the bathing maiden was shaking me gently. I had fallen asleep and was feeling tremendously rested. The princess was gone. The other maidens were gone. Only this one remained. I had half turned over and the towel had fallen away. She was regarding me with interest, and then she said very politely,
"Sex now?"
"What's your name?"
"Timtop."
"You know what, Timtop? Life's too short not to be polite."
When I returned to my quarters sometime later, I almost jumped 20 feet in the air.
"I wouldn't leave my weapons alone next time."
I spun in a circle, nearly falling over, and then looked up. Hanging in the rafters overhead, dangling by his tail, was Mordant.
"Where the hell have you been, and what have you gotten me into?"
"Gotten you into?"
Mordant dropped onto my bed. His tail whipped back and forth lazily as he curled up upon the pillow.
"May I remind you that you're the one who wanted to come to Tokyo?"
"And you were the one who knew we were traveling with a damn princess."
"What? You don't like her?"
"Oh, I like her just fine for someone who stands there and lets her servants be butchered and then walks around bare-ass naked, prepared to climb into a bath with any stranger she happens to encounter. She's just wonderful."
"You don't understand this culture, apropos. Until you do, don't presume to pass judgment on it."
"I'll pass judgment on anything I damned well please, Mordant. Thank you very much. You could have told me she was a princess, you know."
And if I had?
I sat down on the far edge of the bed, studying him carefully.
And I don't want to get into if you had. What I want to know is why you didn't.
She was traveling incognito. I decided to respect her privacy.
I see. And is there anything else you're neglecting to tell me? Any other major piece of information I'd benefit from having?
None that springs readily to mind. Other than that the Skanky family have obviously targeted you for some reason.
Obviously. But why?
I don't know. Can you think of anything you might have done to offend them? Or the Forked Tongue?
Possibly. But they'd have to have known the village I'd come from, and things that had occurred there that they couldn't possibly know.
Never underestimate what the Forked Tongue might and might not know. They have eyes and ears everywhere. You never know who might be feeding them information.
The thought chilled me. Everyone in the village was well aware of all that had transpired. If one of them had some sort of secret ties to the Forked Tongue, then word would have been out about me. And how difficult would it have been to make certain I was sound? I could just see the message. Look for the man with red hair who bears a resemblance to absolutely no one else in the entire country.
Wonderful. How do I know I can trust you?
Because there's no such thing as a talking dragon. Any fool would tell you that. So who would possibly want to ally themselves with something that cannot possibly exist?
Your argument has a pleasantly perverse and twisted logic to it. I like it. So you will be watching my back while I'm in residence here. Is that it?
If you'd like.
But don't let that allow you to get lazy.
You needn't worry about that. Trying to keep an eye out for people who might be trying to kill me is something of a full-time occupation for me. In fact, I met a brand new one just today. His name is...
Go No-Go?
Right. You know him?
Only that he is one of the deadliest warriors in the city and one of the most highly decorated and respected captains of the Hamunrai there is. If he wants you dead, then you are pretty much dead.
Comforting to know that no matter how far I go in my life, I always seem to wind up exactly in the same place as before. Why is that, Mordant? Why do people take an instant dislike to me?
It saves time.
That is a very old joke, Mordant.
The reason jokes become old is because they're true.
Walking was never my strong suit, even under the best of conditions. Considering how relaxed I was by the next morning, however, I was damn lucky to be able to move at all. I was escorted from my rather sumptuous quarters to the council chamber of the Imperia. There I found the Imperia with a half dozen other men, one of whom was the glowering goat No-Go. They were seated in a semicircle, the Imperia in the middle. They were not on chairs, but rather reclining against oversized pillows. Feeling it appropriate, I bowed to him, and he nodded in acknowledgement.
Did you sleep well, Paul?
Yes, thank you, Your Eminence.
And the bath? Was it likewise restful?
I looked straight at Go No-Go, who said nothing.
It was more exciting than I could possibly have anticipated, your marvelousness.
Good. Sit down. You know everyone here?
No.
I eased myself down onto an oversized pillow, decorated with strange pictures of long-limbed birds standing upon one leg.
Good. Then we can begin.
Which was the closest I came to getting an introduction to the members of his inner cabinet. Aside from Go No-Go, the only other name I caught was his chief advisor, Itso Isi, a squat fellow with a scowl that went even deeper than that of Go No-Go. The others made no effort to introduce themselves. I couldn't blame them. For all I knew, doing so would instantly require sacrificing one's life in order to placate the Imperia.
The Forked Tongue must be done away with. It is bad enough that their criminal activities throughout Chin Pan have created an embarrassment and inconvenience for me. But now they have targeted my daughter. The Princess Mitsu would be in their hands right now if it had not been for our visitor. How could you have allowed this to happen, Captain No-Go?
Personally, I'm shocked you haven't offered to kill yourself just for the sheer disgrace of it.
I had men searching for the princess everywhere, Divine One. There are always challenges involved when it comes to protecting one who desires protection. When the situation involves one who has no desire to be protected, it becomes even more difficult.
Would your king accept such an excuse, most honorable Pole?
It is not for a humble messenger to speculate on the inner workings of my liege's lord's mind. It is possible he might accept it. It is equally possible he might not. He is a man of many moods and many mysteries, as are you yourself.
Yes. I would like to meet this ruler of yours at some point, Pole. If and when you depart our land, it will be with the instruction to bring him here so we may talk.
You have offered reward after reward, and still, information about them remains scarce. It might be time to take a new direction in dealing with them.
Such as it's so easy?
An all-out assault. Seek them out throughout the countryside. Root them out wherever they may be hiding. Make that the number one priority of the Hamunrai.
With all respect, Divine One, the forces of the Hamunrai are not endless. Ours is an elite group, your first, best line of defense. We have enemies within and without. Devoting too much of the Hamunrai to any one opponent can be difficult.
I am a mere stranger to these shores, but it seems to me that your job would be to accomplish what His Splendidness asked you to do, rather than listing reasons why you cannot do so.
I did not say I could not do so. I merely was endeavoring to explain.
I did not ask for explanations, Captain. Simply results.
Yes, Imperial. If that is what you wish, the full attention of the Hamunrai will be turned to it.
See that it is.
I would be most interested, however, to know precisely why members of the Skanki family were attacking our esteemed visitor in the streets of the fish market.
Yes, that is puzzling.
The others were nodding as well. It didn't seem to me that Itzi had any personal agenda in the way that Nogo obviously did. He just appeared curious.
They said they were working for someone called Ho. Does that name mean anything to any of you?
A legend. The reputed leader of the Skanke family. If the Ho even exists, virtually nothing is known about him. Or her. It's uncertain even if the Ho is a man or a woman.
If this Ho does exist, naturally it's a man. The idea of a woman running an organization dedicated to death and destruction? Why, it's absurd. Ridiculous.
Don't be so certain. Some of the deadliest creatures I've ever known have been female.
Go Nogo is correct. No mere woman could have ever achieved such an exalted rank.
As you say, O illustrious one.
Discussing a fictional leader is of no relevance, Poe. What matters is, why were you singled out?
What are you implying?
Nothing, Honorable Poe. I am merely asking.
Well, I thought we had been over that. They were attacking the princess, and I simply happened to be there to defend her.
I see. And you had no business dealings with them?
I am not in the habit of engaging in dealings with criminals. Why, Honorable Nogo? Are you? I'm not implying anything, you understand? Just asking.
What are you saying?
He challenges my honor, Divine One!
I did not mean to imply wrongdoing on the part of your head of security, O Gargantuan One. I hope you did not think I meant to do so.
I think nothing of the sort. I just couldn't hear you. I'm an old man and my hearing isn't what it was. So I was asking what you were saying.
I was merely pointing out that one should make sure one's own house is in order before embarking on major forays against enemies.
Yes, exactly. Who told you about my house?
That stopped me cold. I looked in bewilderment at the others.
The Imperial is speaking of the new house he desires to build.
A new house? May I ask what's wrong with this one?
Nothing. It is divine perfection, as are all things associated with me. But I require a house at the outer provinces. In fact, I am calling upon you, Poe, to design it.
What? Design what? A house?
Yes, a new palace, to provide shelter when I visit the outer provinces.
This was a situation that called for the greatest of tact.
That is a great honor, O Resplendent One, but I have no experience as an architect or designer of buildings. As anxious as I am to serve you, I must wonder why you...
Because you know of designs of other lands. You would be able to bring a fresh eye and different perspective.
Again, Imperia, I am honored, but certainly I think there would be others who could do a far superior job.
There had been. However, their designs had not been up to the Imperior's high standards.
Which told me all I needed to know. The previous holders of this illustrious position had all been asked to remove themselves from this plane of existence due to dishonor.
I see.
Of course. I would not ask you to undertake such an endeavor without appropriate compensation.
Oh.
Shall we say 1,000,000 yen?
I could see from the expressions of the others that this was an unexpected development, and no doubt a fairly healthy outlay of funds to serve as an incentive bonus. Considering the reward for the destruction of the Fork Tong was 10,000,000 yen, this had suddenly turned from a no-win scenario to one that was rife with possibilities. Granted, yes, I had no experience whatsoever as an architect, but I had advantages over my predecessors, for one thing. My mandate would be to design a building that looked like nothing the Imperia had seen. That should not prove difficult at all. A healthy reward for drawing pictures of buildings while the destruction of the Fork Tong and their criminal associates, who had killed Ali, was being handled by armed soldiers with no risk whatsoever to myself. Yes, indeed, matters were shaping up rather nicely at that. I bowed deeply, so deeply that I almost tumbled forward off the pillow.
Imperia, it would be an honor to serve you in this manner.
Go No Go looked at me very suspiciously. I could intuit why. He wanted to be pleased over this development, to convince himself that I had just willingly shoved my head into a noose and invited it to be drawn closed around my neck. But my confidence was disconcerting to the point where he no doubt wondered just what it was I had up my sleeve. That was fine by me. The more I could do to keep adversaries off balance, the better I liked it. Several weeks had passed since the initial discussion in the council chamber, which had led to my rather curious installation as chief architect. Curious, since I had no experience at all. And yet the entire process had gone remarkably smoothly. Fortunately enough, I had lived in the castle of King Runcible for more than enough time to memorize every nook and cranny of the place. So all I really had to do was draw a reasonable representation of Runcible's castle, and I was set. I quickly realized I would have to do multiple drawings, since otherwise there would be an overlap of the images, and it would be impossible to distinguish one from the other. So I did a half dozen different designs, beginning with one that laid out the castle's outer garrison wall, followed by the interior towers, the courtyard, and other accoutrements. I worked closely with Itso Isi, who, for all his officiousness, was an efficient enough fellow. He seemed genuinely interested in the designs and kept saying he wanted to do everything he could to make certain my vision was realized. He even simplified my life by providing me with cleverly designed paper with clearly delineated grids upon it. I could use them to indicate scale. I was told that each grid equaled 10 feet, and that was a relief as well. I wasn't anxious to learn an entirely new method of measurement, so it was convenient that chimpanzees used the same calibrations as I was accustomed to. Of even greater relief to me was the Imperia's enthusiasm for the designs. I felt I was walking a tightrope with a shark-filled moat for a net when I first presented the drawings to the Imperia. Despite Isi's claims that he thought them dazzling, I was not fooling myself. The moment the Imperia said he disliked them, I knew I'd be on my own. Fortunately enough, that didn't happen. Instead, the Imperia looked over the drawings with growing excitement, his aged head bobbing up and down as if threatening to tumble off his shoulders.
Yes. Yes, exactly, yes!
He clearly could not have been happier. And if that's how he felt about it, naturally I did as well. I was feeling growing excitement with my current assignment. Believe it or not, as I contemplated the reward, I was thinking about the impact it would have not on my life, but on the lives of the villagers of House Bayou. Yes, I was actually dwelling upon improving not only my own life, but the lives of others. For the longer I was away from the simple folk of House Bayou, the more I came to realize that I had really, truly enjoyed my time there. Indeed, I had been more purely happy in House Bayou for a longer period than any other segment of my life. The more I thought about it, the more I became convinced that my return there was not only likely, but a certainty. In a strange sort of way, it was a classic tale. The young man from the farming village embarks upon a journey of discovery, has some adventures, and then returns to his village wiser in the ways of the world, with rewards for the people of the village that would enrich their lives. Granted, there were some significant differences in my case. First and foremost, I was not a young man. By that point in my life, I had reached my mid-20s. Astonishing to consider, really. When one took into account the number of times people had tried to kill me, it would have seemed rather unlikely I would make it out of my teens. Second, my adventures mostly entailed trying to stay the hell out of trouble rather than throwing myself into the thick of the fray, as most such mythic heroes did. On the other hand, what I found most attractive about the notion was that it made me the center of the story. It was a view that seemed peculiar to me, but I had a singular awareness of the world that no one else appeared to possess. Everyone liked to believe that they were the center of their own little universe, but only I seemed blessed, or more correctly, cursed, with the awareness that my own existence was of so little consequence that it was never important enough to be the center of anything, including my own life. Instead, I excelled at being germane to other people's adventures. I was a sidekick, a supporting character, or, most discouraging of all, an obstacle to be overcome while the hero went on to some great accomplishment. You, of course, think me mad. Who considers the world in that way, in terms of fiction and romance and novel concepts instead of the true, factual way of things? In answer to the question, I do. I had an epiphany one day, you see, and it is really quite impossible to convince others who have not had an epiphany of the truth of things. So, those of you who consider me mad, I would in turn consider you to be poor, unfortunate souls who likely don't even enjoy the rank of being secondary or supporting players in a grand epic. The vast majority of you are very likely relegated to being mere faces in the crowd, or, worst of all, spear fodder. Corpses on legs, walking about until the next great war or unleashed disease or act of barbaric brutality occurs, at which point you will simply be one of the many bodies heaped into a pile to help underscore the tragic seriousness of the predicament. You won't even survive to see how it all turns out. As much as you might feel sorry for me in thinking me demented, I likewise feel sorry for you. I understand the way of things, while you are simply destined to live and die as a mere shadow being in an epic that you didn't even know was being spun. As much as I despise the being I was, I wouldn't want to be you for all the tea in Chinpan. So, my plans for the Imperia's new estate were met with great enthusiasm by the ruler of Chinpan, and they were immediately shipped out to the outer province where a vast army of workers had apparently been sitting idle for quite some time. The Imperia was most pleased to be able to set them to work, and if the Imperia was happy, then I was happy, bordering on ecstatic. In the evening, I would chat with Mordant, who seemed to have an almost supernatural ability to keep himself out of sight. Then again, he was a talking dragon, so perhaps supernatural was not out of the realm of possibility. That left the Princess Mitsu, who, to be honest, I kept hoping would run away again. It wasn't that she was all that much of a difficult for me. After our rather stimulating encounter in the bath, I had hardly run into her at all. Considering the size of the palace, it really wasn't that odd that I didn't encounter her. One day, however, I was invited to a private tea with the Imperia. This, of course, made me nervous. A small table sat between us as tea steeped in the center, and serving girls poured out tea for us as the Imperia nodded in approval.
Have you considered taking advantage of my daughter?
Take advantage, Imperia? I don't...
She is an intelligent female. For a female, that is. She has been trained by the finest self-defense teachers in Chinpan. She might be of use in teaching you fighting techniques.
Oh, well, that is an intriguing notion, great one. Very intriguing and generous.
Plus, you might want to have sex with her.
Your people's approach to sexual union is a bit more straightforward than mine, your stupendousness.
Is it?
Yes, we tend not to discuss it so blatantly, nor in my culture would a father offer intimacy with his daughter in so matter-of-fact a fashion, unless, of course, she were a
what?
I had been prepared to say prostitute, but I realized an instant before the words escaped my lips that it probably wouldn't be the wisest thing to say. Quickly, I substituted.
Princess, of course, if she were a princess and her father a king, well, then naturally different rules of conduct apply, because when one is royalty and divinely inspired, there are no rules save that which the royalty makes up.
And that is as it should be. My daughter is very wise in the ways of pleasuring a man.
Is she? Is she?
Oh, yes. She has read many texts on the subject.
Well, that's how I hear you get experience.
It is possible you could learn much from her.
I have no doubt, but Imperial, you see, I am but a lowly messenger. Understand, I take great pride in the fact that you have treated me with such honor and respect. In here, however, I cannot help but feel that I would not be worthy of such a treasure.
Not worthy? Ah, I comprehend. You are concerned that because of that feeling, you would be unable to perform as a man should.
What? Now wait,
It is all right. You should not think the less of yourself simply because you are impotent.
Imperia, I didn't say...
It happens to all men. Well, not to me. Never to me. But I am more than a man, so it is understandable. But do not worry, Poe. Your secret is safe with me.
Imperia, I am not impotent. I can function perfectly well as the next man. Better than the next man. Why, I could take your daughter right now and...
Very well.
At which point I realized I'd well and truly screwed myself. Appropriate, I suppose.
Tell my daughter that the Honorable Poe will be coming to her chamber shortly, and she is to tend to him in the manner that a woman is supposed to tend to a man. I will appreciate an excellent performance on your part, Poe. It will help to take her mind off that foolish peasant boy.
Peasant boy?
Yes, a pathetic young beggar who caught her fancy one day when she was out in the marketplace several years ago. She became obsessed with him. For a long time, she spoke of nothing else. Then one day, he disappeared, as such creatures tend to do. She blamed me for that, as if I am responsible for the comings and goings of gutter rats.
It sounds familiar.
Oh, it is. Even after all this time, she still brings him up. Take her mind off him, Noble Poe. If you are a man, you can accomplish this.
Interesting thing about the doors in the palace, which I had not mentioned earlier. They were made of some sort of rice paper, stretched across wooden frames. Rather than opening like normal doors, they would slide from one side to the other, and you could see through them to some degree. I stood outside the door that led into the princess's chamber.
Princess Mitsu?
I saw the outline of her figure through the door. She was standing there like a shadow come to life. She stretched her arms luxuriously over her head, and I could tell, even though she was in shadow, that she was either unclothed or wearing nothing to speak of.
My father told me you'd be coming here.
Yes, well, that's open to debate.
Will you be entering?
I suddenly felt the need to throw myself into a tub of ice water.
I do not think that would be wise at this time.
My father desires it.
Do you?
My father desires it.
What about your desires?
My desires? My desires are of no consequence, Honorable Poe. That has been made abundantly clear by my divine father. By everyone, really.
And what about the boy? The boy in the marketplace?
What of him?
Does he feel that way as well? That what you think is of no consequence? Mitsu.
He was so beautiful. The moment I looked at him, I knew. I just knew. Have you ever looked at someone and just known?
No.
It is as if you've been together in a previous life and recognize one another from that earlier incarnation. The connection is just there, and you instantly know that you would do anything for that person. That they are more important to you than anything in the world, including yourself. Such is the power of that connection.
I envy you that. I'm not sure whether a cynic such as myself could ever feel that way.
In any event, he's gone. And my father is responsible.
You don't know that.
I do. I do know it. And he knows I know it.
Unwillingly, my mind spun back to Entebbe. She, too, had been in love with a young man who had earned the disapproval of those who knew best. Her great love had been tacit, my greatest friend in youth and my greatest enemy in life. I had been consumed with jealousy upon learning of her feelings for Tacit, even though I had no particular affection for the princess. In truth, I actually disliked her intensely. But the mere fact of her devotion to Tacit was enough for me to use every means in my power to sunder their bond. And I had succeeded beyond my wildest dreams. Odd. I never felt guilty about it until that moment.
You are silent, Poe. Why?
As you are thinking of friends long gone, so am I.
Are we to have intimacy with one another, then?
I would feel it. Trespassing, Princess. And dishonorable.
It was quite possibly the first time I'd used the word and actually meant it.
But my father wishes it.
What your father does not know cannot hurt him or us.
You would lie to my divine father?
That wouldn't be possible, would it? Since he's divine, he would know the truth of things. So if he asks, we will smile and look knowingly at him and say nothing beyond that, if that is acceptable to you.
She rested one hand gently upon the paper door. I reached up and placed my palm flat against hers.
You are a decent and caring man, apropos.
No, but I am trying.
Thank you for trying.
Have no fear. I am quite certain that sooner or later, somehow or other, I'll wind up being punished for it.
As I've mentioned in the past, I despise my knack for being correct all the time. Over the next 6 months, I conducted the most torrid non-affair I had ever been engaged in. As I expected, nothing more than looks and smiles and even the occasional polite chuckle was required to satisfy the Imperia that his daughter was performing her designated duties in terms of keeping me sexually challenged. Meantime, a couple of times a week, I would go during the evening to the chambers of the princess. After our first non-encounter, I actually entered her rooms on all subsequent visits. We would always make sure to extinguish the lights so our shadows would not betray our activities against the door. And we would talk. Just talk. As the weeks passed and we carried on our sustained non-affair, I found Mitsu to be, by turns, acerbic, funny, melancholy, wise, and foolish. The entire gamut of human emotions. There seemed to be nothing missing from her. She was a whole person. And no one aspect of her personality, such as, say, a delight in seeing things burned, consuming the rest of her. We established a relaxed rapport, far too relaxed to risk it with anything as potentially complicated as intercourse. Besides, it was quite obvious to me that even though he was gone from her life, Mitsu still had strong feelings for the nameless boy from the marketplace.
You know what? Judging by the way things usually seem to transpire in my life, your missing love is off on some great quest even as we speak. He's embarking upon wondrous challenges and ordeals and will eventually return with great wealth to claim your hand in marriage.
You spin lovely fantasies, apropos.
I have no time for fantasies. My real life is bizarre enough.
Although Mitsu didn't teach me a damn thing about sex, she did teach me other things, such as some of the various hand-to-hand combat techniques I'd seen her displaying. Naturally, I couldn't hope to match her agility or even come close to it, but she started showing me what she called forms, in which I would make various movements again and again and again, swinging my arms, sweeping my hands into blocking positions, repeating other gestures which all seemed almost random and more like dance than anything resembling self-defense. I couldn't help but think that these were some of the techniques that Chimpan Ali was in the process of showing me. Unfortunately, he had died in the midst of endeavoring to do so, so I would never know the specifics of what he wanted to show me. Mitsu, however, was a perfectly decent teacher. I certainly hoped she wouldn't wind up being killed as well. Still, there was one image, one moment that I was not able to erase from my mind. An instance of heartlessness that didn't seem in keeping with the caring, thoughtful young woman I'd gotten to know. One night, Mitsu was even able to tell that it was preying upon me and asked me what I was thinking about.
That young woman, the one who killed herself, the one you singled out.
Oh, her. What about her?
Why her? Why did you pick out that girl? Had she done something to offend you, angered you in some way?
No, of course not. She was my favorite handmaiden.
Your favorite? and yet you chose her to be the one to end her life.
Poor Apropos. You truly still don't comprehend. I didn't sacrifice her. I venerated her. To die in order to maintain the integrity of your master's or mistress's honor. There is no greater reward for distinguished service than that.
I don't understand.
It is because you do not truly understand honor.
No, I understand it. I just don't understand dying because of it.
Perhaps someday you will.
Then, one day, the Imperator came to me. More than 6 months had passed, and he was anxious to see how his workers were doing.
We are going to go out ourselves and check their progress.
Imperator, it has only been 6 months. I doubt they've managed to build all that much.
Are you questioning my word?
Absolutely not, Imperia.
That's excellent. How far do you think they've gotten?
I don't know, Imperia. I'm sure they've accomplished as much as is humanly possible.
That is never enough. It is necessary for all creatures to do more than is humanly possible. Only then can we hope to become what the gods want us to be.
I did what I always did when I wasn't sure what the Imperia was talking about. I nodded. I tended to nod a lot. That evening, I informed Mitsu that I would not be around for the next few days, and explained why.
That is unfortunate.
Why? Why unfortunate?
Because anything can happen when it comes to my father. Just be careful, Apropos.
She rubbed my shoulders, drew my head forward, and placed her forehead against my own.
I would miss you if you died.
As would I.
The next day, we set out. It was quite a procession that made its way across Chimpan. Myself and the Imperia, of course. Itsu Isi was there as well. The Imperia appeared to listen to everything he had to say. Every so often, he would nod, which pleased Itsu Isi to no end, and he would veer off onto another incredibly important topic. We were certainly well protected. There was a handful of Hamunrai there, but my assumption was that most of that upper echelon of warriors was off with go-no-go investigating the forked tong business. Instead of the Hamunrai, there was a large column of regular Chimpan soldiers on either side of us. They looked as if they'd been cut from a cookie cutter, each one identical, marching in perfect uniform stride, or in some cases on horseback, with their mouths also moving in precision. The grim expressions were identical, the way they wore their swords, their weapons, absolutely indistinguishable one from the other. The journey took several days. We passed farm villages along the way, or groups of travelers standing to either side of the road to make way for the Imperia's procession. People would bow and scrape as the Imperia passed. I liked to entertain myself every so often by pretending they were responding to my presence rather than his. When one is on a long journey, one passes the time any way one can. On the fifth day of our journey, I knew we were drawing close. I could even hear the sounds of construction coming from the far side of a ridge. We would not be able to see the progress of the house until we achieved the top of the ridge, but that was perfectly fine as far as I was concerned. It would be more dramatic that way, to ride to the top of the ridge and look down upon the sprawling achievement that would, if my instructions were being followed, look remarkably like King Runcible's castle, lifted stone by stone from Mysteria and relocated to Chimpan. I drew close, ignoring Itsu Isi.
Your divine grace, the alchemists are calling it gunpowder, and it will make you...
Prepare to be dazzled, your worship.
The columns of soldiers separated as we approached the ridge, allowing us access to the top. The Imperial's horse reached the top of the ridge first, which was, of course, as it should be. He paused there for a long moment, staring outward thoughtfully.
I am perceiving a severe lack of dazzlement.
Well, I certainly didn't like the sound of that. I snapped my horse's reins and urged the beast forward, carefully so that I didn't startle the Imperial steed and cause an accident. I achieved the ridge and looked down and couldn't believe what I was seeing. Far below, like a swarm of ants, the builders were constructing what was clearly a wall. It was supposed to be one of the four walls of the exterior wall that would surround the castle. There was not, however, a castle. Not even the beginnings of the foundation of the castle. Instead, there was simply a wall. The one wall. It stretched as far as the eye could see, miles and miles in every direction, and was roughly 25 feet high. As near as I could determine, workers were continuing to labor to extend the wall farther and farther both ways.
What the hell?
There's a wall there.
Yes, Imperia, I know
there's there is one wall. Should there not be at least three others?
I would think so, yes.
To form a sort of square.
Most definitely.
And yet I count just the one. One very long wall, running, it would seem, the length of my country's border. I do not pretend to understand it, but I cannot say I like it.
I fully understand, Great One, and we shall immediately investigate the cause of this anomaly.
See that you do, because I am quite sure I wanted to see a house, or minimally, the recognizable beginnings of a house, not a single wall. And if a single wall is all you have to show me, honorable architect, then you will have a serious problem on your hands.
I noticed that he wasn't saying we would. I would. Quickly, we made our way down to the worksite. The workers saw us coming, and word spread quickly throughout the camps. Within minutes, all construction had halted, and everyone was on their knees, their eyes resolutely down. It didn't take us long to find the foreman, an aggressive fella named Can-Do. Renowned for his attitude, he approached us, grim-faced and clearly determined to make a positive impression upon the Imperia. He had my plans for the construction of the residence tucked under one arm. They looked rather worn. I had the feeling he never put the damn things down. But Can-Do wasn't stupid. He could see immediately that the Imperia did not appear happy.
Greetings. Work continues apace on the wall.
On the wall?
The Imperia turned and looked at me questioningly.
What about the other walls?
We do not have remotely sufficient building materials for the other three. We elected to accomplish as much as we could on the one wall and wait for more materials to arrive.
More materials? But what you had should have been sufficient to construct the entire palace. Instead, you have placed it all into this
wall. Is it not great?
A great wall is of no use to me. How did this happen?
We simply followed the designs we've been sent.
Designs crafted by you, Poe.
But my designs didn't call for a miles-long wall.
I dismounted and limped over to Can-Do, practically ripping the design out from under his arm. I eased myself onto the ground and spread the designs out.
Look here. Each of these squares is supposed to be 10...
Keep in mind, I didn't know how to write the language. But it's so easy it volunteered to show me how to write. One square equals 10 feet for me. And I had then meticulously copied what he'd written onto the plans. The thing was, I had stared at the designs for so long that I knew every square inch of them. So when I look at the writing now where the scale was, I knew something was wrong. There was a variation in the letters. Minor variation, so small as to be almost unnoticeable at casual glance. A line or two added, but it was enough to change it.
What does this say?
One square equals 10 miles.
No, that's not possible.
Possible, not possible, no matter. That is what it says. Our job is not to question documents. Our job is to build what documents say. We did our job.
It's so easy, looked at me in an almost accusatory manner.
Honorable Poe, how could you possibly have made such an error?
Me? You're the one who told me how to write the scale.
And I told you correctly. I can't be held responsible if you sent it out with a mistake.
There was no mistake when I sent it out.
And yet, there it is. Do not attempt to shirk responsibility.
But you looked at the plans as well.
And they were correct when I did.
But now they're wrong.
And whose fault is that?
That was, of course, when I knew. But if it came clear to me, Ito Easy had set me up. He had deliberately tampered with the plans for the purpose of making me look bad to the Imperia. I didn't know when he'd done it, but he had. And I was being left twisting in the crow's cage because of it.
You little bastard!
In an uncharacteristically aggressive move, I swung my walking staff at him. Ah! It slammed across his knees, taking his legs out from under him and sending him sprawling to the ground. In a heartbeat, I was atop him, gripping my staff firmly and placing it crosswise across his throat.
Admit it! Admit what you did!
Even if he'd been inclined to admit what I wanted him to, pressure from my staff was making it impossible for him to draw enough air to say anything. He struggled in futility, glorious terror reflected in his face, and suddenly I was being hauled off him. Ahamanrai was on either side of me, and I realized my feet weren't touching the ground. Isi lay on the ground, gasping, his hand to his throat.
I am disappointed, Paul. Very disappointed.
This is not my fault, Imperia. I'm being set up. This man is trying to get rid of me, to dishonor me.
That is a very grave charge. Do you have any evidence?
Evidence? There's a sonic wall there. A wall that exists because of what he did.
Easy was managing to shake his head and protest his innocence. Everyone was looking at me suspiciously. Part of me understood why. After all, who was the outsider? Who was the one who was unlike the others? Is it not always the unknown and unfamiliar who becomes the scapegoat? Ito Easy had obviously understood that all too well and realized he could booby-trap me with impunity. And I, the booby, was indeed trapped.
You have to be able to see through this, Imperia!
My arms were already starting to go numb because I was being suspended on either side by the larger Ahamanrai.
You have to realize that this is some sort of trick.
Are you claiming that one who has the divine sight could be tricked?
No, I'm not saying that.
Then how can you possibly claim the trickery is involved, when by definition I could not be fooled, no matter how clever the deception?
I had no response to that. No matter what I said, I would only be burying myself deeper.
It is your name that is signed upon the designs. It is your carelessness that has wasted the time and materials to create this pointless wall. I can see no other way to redeem yourself, Paul, than to take your life immediately.
Why, your honor hasn't been besmirched. I'm from out of town. Truly, I'm not part of your staff.
It was the Imperial who selected you for this task.
Ito Easy looked uneasy on his feet, but deep anger burned in his eyes. He looked as if he'd be all too happy to take whatever measures were necessary to speed along my demise.
Since you botched it, naturally it reflects upon him.
I didn't botch it. I was made to look bad by you.
That is a lie, and you only dishonor yourself further.
Oh, the horror of that notion. What could be the outcome of further dishonor be? Perhaps I'll have to kill myself a second time. Imperia, listen to me. I did nothing wrong. What kind of life has ended because of such unfair means?
Yours.
Frankly, considering what my life had been, I couldn't say he was entirely without foundation in his claim. If anyone was going to wind up losing their life over something as spectacularly as absurd as this, it would very likely be me.
You will have 1 hour to take your life. You should know that I do not customarily provide so much time. But you are from beyond our shores, and therefore it is important that I be as generous as possible.
If you were truly going to be generous, Imperia, you could just let me live.
I could use some tea. It's so easy. Would you like some tea?
That would be excellent, yes.
Anyone else?
Naturally, when the man who is offering you tea can have you kill yourself for refusing to join him, that is going to create a powerful thirst for all concerned. And as everyone ran about to prepare tea for the Imperia, I was dragged off to end what I laughingly referred to as my existence. They had erected a small tent for me. Very considerate. I'd hate to have to die while a large number of strangers were looking on. The only things in the tent, aside from myself, were my weapons, my two swords, my walking staff, and the sign. There was, however, nowhere for me to go. I couldn't possibly fight my way out. There were far too many guards. I'd be cut to ribbons before I got 10 feet. I was kneeling, wondering just how best to proceed. I had no idea who was about to enter yet, and amazingly, I had a suspicion, which turned out to be exactly right. Go, no go, entered, scowling as always.
What are you doing here?
I thought you were off dealing with the forked tongue.
I am. The Imperial asked me to meet him here in order to give him an update. Every so often, the Imperial prefers to discuss matters as far away from the palace as possible.
Commendably cautious. And how is the forked tongue doing?
That's none of your concern.
Rather curious, Nogo, how you've had so long to dispense with the forked tongue once and for all, and instead they're still operating. I wonder what could possibly be causing the delay.
Your hour is nearly gone. I am here to oversee your taking of your life.
And a fine show it would be. But let's talk about other matters for a moment.
There is nothing to talk about.
Isn't there? I'm not stupid, you know.
You're not?
No. I'm able to figure things out. To put clues together. To perceive the truth of that which people are not discussing, or hoping to keep hidden.
Are you planning to kill yourself anytime soon? Because I really have other things I must do.
I got to my feet.
You tried to kill me because you know of the animosity I bear for the forked tongue.
I never tried to kill you. If I had been trying to kill you, you would have been dead, which would have saved us some time now. If you require a short sword to begin the process...
He pulled a sharp blade from the folds of his kimono and offered it to me, hilt first.
You don't have to pretend anymore.
I don't.
I've figured it out. You're actually in league with the forked tongue. Or with the Skankee family.
You figured that out, have you?
Yes. And the fact is, I'm very interested in joining them.
Now, on the surface, that may have seemed a hell of a gamble. But keep in mind the circumstances. I was standing there face to face with one of the most formidable warriors in the Imperial stable, who was making clear that either I was to kill myself, or he would send me to the gods with one swipe of his blade. If I didn't have the guts, he would spill them for me. I was not being presented with a sizable number of options. But if my vague suspicion were correct, if in fact Go-No-Go was in league with the forked tongue, then what I was saying might have an outside chance of saving my life.
You wish to join the forked tongue?
That has been my goal for some time, you see. The ruler I represent has always dissented. Who is the true future of Chimpan, and who we should form an alliance with? He's not interested in forging bonds with the Imperia because he knows that it will be the forked tongue that will be ultimately triumphant.
Interesting. You wish to join the organization which attacked you in the marketplace.
Now everyone else seems to believe that it was the princess who was the target, but you say that I was the one they were trying to kill. Why would you say that?
Because I can see why anyone would want to kill you.
And suddenly his hand was a blur, and the hilt of the blade slammed against the side of my head. I fell over, my skull throbbing, and blindly I reached for the nearest thing I could get my hands on. One of the sai I yanked from my belt.
You wave a farming implement at me?
Go-No-Go could not have been more amused by an offensive tactic if I had turned around and flashed my naked buttocks at him. Then all amusement vanished from his voice as he advanced on me.
My patience is running out, and your insults only elevate the depth of your dishonor.
I lunged forward with the sai, hoping to get lucky. I didn't. Go-No-Go was far too quick. He took a few steps back, bumping up against the side of the tent, and he yanked out his sword from its scabbard, even as he moved. In one smooth motion, he swung the sword. And it was only by a miracle that I moved my hand fast enough to save it from being severed at the wrist. As it was, I lost my grip on the sai, and it skidded across the ground. There was not a lot of room in the tent. All Go-No-Go would have to do was take a step or two toward me, and he would be easily able to eviscerate me with one sweep.
You are a pathetic fool.
He blinked, seemed rather puzzled, and then he looked down. A sword blade was protruding from his chest, having penetrated from his back and through out the front. He looked back up at me.
How did you do that?
Then his body spasmed as the sword was yanked back out through the same means it had entered. He stood there for a moment, swaying, a red splotch spreading rapidly across his chest. His gaze remained fixed on me, and he tried to bring his sword up to finish the last job he would ever undertake for the Imperia. But his arms had already gone numb from the shock, and his weapon fell from his hand.
I have veiled, the Imperial. I have dishonored him. I must kill myself immediately.
Don't let me stop you.
I slid back as fast as I could, and he fell to the ground, lying there with a look of pained frustration on his face. Then I looked at the far side of the tent. I could just barely see a figure standing there, outlined against the darkening sky. Then a blood-stained blade sliced through the tent. A black-clad figure was standing on the other side. I recognized her instantly. Well, not her specifically, but certainly the group to whom she owed allegiance.
We meet, and are met, have never met, and will meet again.
The Aeneas Ninja. I had no idea whether she was the one whom I'd fought back in the village. All I knew was she was eyeing me hungrily.
My passion is a flame, like a blazing star consuming the heavens.
I wasn't taking any chances this time, nor was I letting myself get caught up in her endless super real rants. I yanked out the bird's head sword and brought the blade between us. She froze, her eyes staring at the blade hungrily. There was something about her, something almost familiar. Suspicion began to play on the outer edges of my mind.
Well, this is it, isn't it? The blade your people killed my teacher for. My guess it's the real reason some of your associates attacked me in the fish market. Why do you want this weapon, eh? What's its secret? Is there a treasure hidden within it? Is it the key to something? Is it magic?
I advanced upon her. She didn't seem to move. Her eyes, the only part of her that I could see, remained with their gaze upon the sword. She appeared to be coveting it.
Well, come on, speak. You couldn't natter on enough a moment ago. I've been through enough in my life to know when people are seeking a talisman. But this time I'm going to be firmly in control of things. If quests insist upon throwing themselves upon me, then for once I'm going to initiate it. I'm going to master it. I won't be running 5 steps behind while everyone else seeks.
The Aeneas Ninja brought the tip of her own sword up to her face covering and cut a small hole 1/2 inch under her nose. This permitted her to extend her tongue from behind the covering. She laid her own sword down carefully upon the floor, then approached the Toshi blade and dropped to her knees beside it.
The ocean of my passion crashes within me like a great wave of orgasmic serenity.
Her tongue flicked out and deftly licked the flat of the blade. Then she eased her head alongside it.
I feel the heat awakening within me. My moon of ecstasy orbits the sphere of my desire, pulling one upon the other as the stars burn with...
All right, that's enough of that.
I pulled the sword away and shoved it in the sheath. I looked around nervously. Something was wrong. This crazy woman had cut her way into the tent, which was surrounded by Hamonrai and soldiers, yet no alarm had been sounded. No people had responded to the sound of fighting.
Do you truly wish to join the Forked Tongue?
No greater desire beats within me.
Then come. Come with blinding intensity of crashing blue waves upon a distant shore.
I will smack you.
Promises.
She then moved out through the hole in the tent.
I am reborn, moving through the opening like a newly spawned child, destined for woman, experiencing...
I wondered if it was too late to stab her with a sigh. Cautiously, I stepped through the rip in the tent and looked around in bewilderment.